This is an impressive crowd, the haves and the have-mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base.
You gave them the old razzle-dazzle.
Greetings. This is podcast number 28 of Blast the Right. I'm Jack Clark from therationalradical.com, www.therationalradical.com. Today we have two segments. First, why is Bush's Drug Enforcement Administration trying to throw in jail doctors who prescribe pain medication for people in pain? Second, Pat Robertson, Donald Rumsfeld, and John Negroponte are at it again, attacking Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. Get ready to enter a Count the Lies contest. Let's get right into the first segment. This is another installment of my continuing series, The 1,356,984 Ways Right-Wingers Cause Misery, Suffering, and Pain. In this segment, we're talking literally about pain, the excruciating pain that those suffering from cancer and other diseases often face on a 24/7 basis. Imagine my surprise when I was reading the New York Times op-ed page and I saw an article entitled Party of Pain, and it was referring to Republicans. I quickly asked myself, did I write this? No, I don't have a New York Times column. Did another crazy progressive like me write it? No, it was written by John Tierney. He's the replacement columnist for retired right-winger William Sapphire. Tierney, however, isn't a right-winger through and through. He's a libertarian, so on civil liberties issues, he's not so bad. He's not a right-wing fanatic. And on these types of issues, like with warrantless wiretapping, libertarians are just as condemnatory of Bush as are progressives. Here's how Tierney started off, quote, "As the baby boomers age, more and more Americans will either be enduring chronic pain or taking care of someone in pain. The Republican Party has been reaching out to them with a two-step plan. One, do not give patients medicine to ease their pain. Two, if they are in great pain and near death, do not let them put an end to their misery." The Republicans have been so determined to become the pain party that they've brushed aside their traditional belief in states' rights. The Bush administration wants lawyers in Washington and federal prosecutors with no medical training to tell doctors how to treat patients. Close quote. I'm going to focus on Tierney's number one, do not give patients medicine to ease their pain, not on his number two, assisted suicide. Assisted suicide has too many religious elements for me to deal with in anything less than an entire podcast. So we'll stick to the do not give patients medicine to ease their pain. How do the Bushians accomplish this devil's work of keeping critically ill people in severe pain, in excruciating agony? It all goes back to the Controlled Substances Act of 1970. 1970, that's when Richard Nixon, Tricky Dick, was in office. I never thought back then that I'd say it, but I'd rather have Dick Nixon in office than who we have now. I don't know if Nixon was any less evil than Bush, but he was certainly a lot less skilled in manipulating public opinion. But enough of that aside. So after the Controlled Substances Act was passed, the Justice Department issued some regulations. It requires that prescriptions for controlled substances, quote, be issued for a legitimate medical purpose, close quote. The Federal Drug Enforcement Administration is using the legal theory that when doctors prescribe these painkillers, it's not for a legitimate medical purpose. Doctors have been prosecuted for prescribing painkillers like OxyContin, even in cases where there is, one, no evidence that any of the drugs are being resold on the streets, two, the doctor truly believed that the drugs were needed by the patient, three, the patient wasn't abusing the drugs in any way, and four, the patient truly was in pain. If this sounds crazy, it is. Federal prosecutors don't take into account that different patients need totally different levels of pain medication. They also don't take into account the potency of the pills. They just focus on the numbers. Tierney has a good line, quote, "They want enough pills of any dosage to make a good photo at a press conference," close quote. Now I'll tell you about one example. I'd suggest you get a soft pillow to punch after you hear this, or you might put your fist through the wall, or the face of the nearest Bush supporter, and we don't want that. Punch the pillow instead. The example is Richard Payee. He's wheelchair bound, and he's been in physical agony for decades. Federal agents conducted surveillance of him and surveillance of his wife for 2 months. They found no evidence that he was selling any of his painkillers. But the prosecutor decided that he had to have been selling them. Why? Because the prescriptions worked out to about 25 pills per day. But there was a perfectly good reason why he was taking 25 pills per day. These were low-strength painkillers. His doctor specifically wanted to avoid prescribing the kind of painkillers that the DEA focuses on. Payee could have taken a few high-strength oxycodone pills, but instead he took a veritable cocktail of pills. That cocktail contained low doses of oxycodone and other painkillers like Tylenol. And here's what's critical. If you add up the total daily dose of oxycodone that Payee was taking in all those pills, it was less than what he would have gotten in one single high-strength OxyContin pill. Less than one OxyContin pill. And to put that in context, some chronic pain patients, after developing a tolerance to OxyContin, wind up needing 10 high-strength OxyContins a day to get pain relief. This guy was taking the equivalent of less than one a day. Poor Richard Payee, in a wheelchair, certainly not a drug dealer, is now spending 25 years in prison. He was convicted. Many DEA prosecutions, of course, are of the doctors, not the patients. What's been the effect of this on doctors across the United States? Simple. They're scared. According to Tierney, the New England Journal of Medicine stated this month that, quote, "The DEA has made doctors reluctant to give opioids to desperately ill patients, even when these drugs are the most effective pain treatment," close quote. The DEA denies this, of course. They claim that honest doctors have nothing to fear from them, only doctors who are helping drug dealers. The DEA put out a statistic that only 0.1%, 0.1% of the 600,000 doctors in the U.S. were being investigated. Well, first of all, couldn't this have a chilling effect? But no matter, because this number, like all right-wing numbers, is totally bogus. Except for specialists in pain treatment, Most doctors write few, if any, prescriptions for this type of opioid painkiller. Pain specialists write most of these types of prescriptions. And a professor of political science at the University of North Florida named Ronald Libby, he estimates that 17% of those types of doctors were investigated during 1 year by the DEA. And then you have to add on local and state authorities. They investigate also, often in conjunction with the DEA. All this means that any given pain specialist could have a 1 in 3 chance of being investigated for prescribing opioids. 1 in 3! Not like the lying right-winger said, 1 in 1,000. Right-wingers are always against big government, no big government, unless it can do their bidding. Then they're all for big government. Tierney writes, quote, "You know Republicans have lost their bearings when they need a lesson in states' rights from Janet Reno. For the federal government to decide what constitutes legitimate medicine," she wrote, "would wrongly displace the states as the primary regulators of the medical profession," close quote. On a personal note, let me state that my mother, may she rest in peace, passed away from cancer, and towards the end, she was in a lot of pain, and we had her in a hospice, and they gave her a heck of a lot of painkillers. She needed a ton of them to be comfortable. This was back in 92, before the Bush DEA right-wing craziness took over. But I'll tell you, if a doctor had told me back then that he was afraid to prescribe something because the DEA would have gotten on his case and he was not going to prescribe enough painkillers for my mother, I would have gone to the street. I would have found something there for her. I would not let my mother be in pain if it could be avoided. I wonder, are there people now being driven to such desperation because of the DEA's actions, the chilling effect its prosecutions have had on doctors across the country? Unlike many podcasts where we leave with the right-wingers doing what they want and being unchallenged, here we have a bit of good news. Perhaps only temporary, but good news nevertheless. Bush's then-Attorney General John Ashcroft had challenged Oregon's assisted suicide law under that same legal theory that assisted suicide was not a, quote, legitimate medical purpose, close quote, and that the doctors could be prosecuted for prescribing the cocktails that people used to end their lives. The New England Journal of Medicine warned that if the Bush administration won the Oregon case, that could cause doctors all over the nation to, quote, abandon patients and their families in their moment of greatest need, close quote. Happily, the Supreme Court knocked down Ashcroft's arguments and ruled 6-3 to uphold the Oregon law. Justice Anthony Kennedy wrote the majority opinion. He wrote that the Controlled Substances Act didn't empower the Attorney General, quote, to define general standards of medical practice, close quote. No, what it does is, quote, bars doctors from using their prescription writing powers as a means to engage in illicit drug dealing and trafficking as conventionally understood, close quote. So isn't that just what the DEA is doing in these pain relief cases? It's trying to define general standards of medical practice. You certainly couldn't say that those doctors are engaging in illicit drug dealing and trafficking as conventionally understood, which is what the Supreme Court said the law was intended to stop. Remember the Richard Pei case. There was no evidence of any of the drugs being resold on the street. The patient needed the drugs, truly needed them, the doctor felt. The patient didn't abuse the drugs, and the patient was in sufficient pain to warrant those prescriptions. So you would assume, wouldn't you, that if the Supreme Court stopped Ashcroft's craziness with assisted suicide, it would certainly rein the DEA in on the much more medically traditional function of pain relief. Who would vote for pain? Guess who? Right-wingers. The three dissenters in the Oregon case were Scalia, Thomas, and Roberts. Good old John Roberts, Bush's Chief Justice appointee. Assuming Alito would have joined them, we get one more Bush appointee to the Supreme Court, and not only can you kiss Roe v. Wade goodbye, but we're going to also kiss goodbye pain relief if you're in agony from some medical problem. For the present, at least, while this Supreme Court decision is still the law of the land, Tierney makes two solid suggestions. Doctors who have been unjustly convicted under this now discredited legal theory should be released from prison. And Congress needs to restrain these fanatical, out-of-control drug warriors in the DEA. I could go into a whole riff here about how the right wing's fanatical anti-drug efforts, which threaten to prevent patients from getting pain relief when they're in agony, fits in with my general theory that right wingers have the personality characteristics of sociopaths and that they enjoy causing others to be in pain. But I won't get into that now. You can check out podcast number 2 for that. Here, let's just stick with the facts. And those are that if the right wing had their way, there'd be countless numbers of patients in agony, in terrible pain, because doctors would be afraid to write prescriptions for adequate pain relief medication for them. A world of pain and misery, suffering, and death. That's what the right wing is all about. What matters, hell? In this segment, we'll update the situation with Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. Pat Robertson, Donald Rumsfeld, and John Negroponte recently attacked Hugo Chavez with lies and distortions. Why are they attacking this guy? I dealt with this subject at length in podcast number 18. Check that one out for an extended treatment on the subject. In short, Chavez is providing a very bad example for people in other countries and even for the poor in this country. Because Chavez is using Venezuela's oil wealth not to enrich a small, tiny percentage of wealthy families there, but to help the poor majority in that country. These people aren't poor in the sense of, oh, they can't afford a second car. No, they're poor in the sense that they don't have enough food. Their children can't go to school. They've never seen a doctor. Chavez is directing the oil wealth of that country to providing food, housing, education, medical care for these people. That's, of course, the opposite of right-wing ideology. They try to make sure the government does not provide these things for anybody. The right-wing doesn't want people in other countries to see this example, and they don't want people in the United States to see this example. This is how crazy Chavez drives them. Listen to the prior loopy Pat Robertson call to assassinate him.
You know, I don't know about this doctrine of assassination, but if he thinks we're trying to assassinate him, I think that we really ought to go ahead and do it. It's a whole lot cheaper than starting a war. We have the ability to take him out, and I think the time has come that we exercise that ability. We don't need another $200 billion war to get rid of one, you know, strong-arm dictator. It's a whole lot easier to have some of the covert operatives do the job and then get it over with.
Well, Robertson is at it again. Here he's in an exchange with Alan Combs. Combs does a pretty good job of a change here in pinning Robertson down. When you listen, can you identify three Robertson lies plus a bonus lie by another participant? Regular listeners to Blast the Right should be able to identify at least two of Robertson's lies. Here's the clip.
Should Chavez be assassinated?
Well, one day he's going to be aiming nuclear weapons, and what's coming across the Gulf isn't going to be Katrina, it's going to be his nukes.
So would you feel better going back to the original comment that if he were assassinated, the world would be a safer place?
I think South America would. He has got hit squads. He's a very dangerous
man. So you're
man.
Not taking back the comment. You believe assassination of Hugo Chavez would be in the best interest of the world.
Rather than going to war, one day we're going to have to go to war, I'm afraid, if he continues his policy. You know, but I don't know. I wrote him a letter. I apologized to him.
But wait a minute. If you're saying you apologized to him, what you just said seems to contravene that.
Because
you just now said you think it'd be better if he'd be assassinated.
Alan, the whole thing we've got to deal with is that one day, if he continues his course of trying to mobilize Marxist powers in South America, it's going to be
very popular with his country.
Well, yes and no, but he does.
He's building up weaponry against the United States, isn't he?
He's also calling for the destruction of George Bush. He calls him a war criminal.
So you want him taken out?
Not now, but one day. My premise is, and I think that's, you know, until that comment came out, everybody thought Chavez was a fellow having to do with table grapes in California.
The way we could say is the world would be better off without him where he is, because he is a danger to the United States.
Now here are some excerpts from that clip where I identify the lies, and I'll make a comment or two. Here's lie number one.
Should Chavez be assassinated?
Well, one day he's going to be aiming nuclear weapons, and what's coming across the Gulf isn't going to be Katrina, it's going to be his nukes.
It's going to be his nukes? Well, what is Robertson talking about? He's just pulling stuff out of thin air. It's his nukes? Chavez has nukes? He's getting nukes? What is Robertson babbling about? Here's lie number two.
He has got hit squads. He's a very dangerous
man. So you're not
hit squads? Hit squads? Where are the allegations that Chavez is assassinating people? I don't see that. People aren't making that accusation. Pat, you're the one who's calling for hit squads to kill him. Here's lie number three.
It's very popular with this country.
Well, yes and no.
What do you mean, yes and no? It's yes! Chavez has been elected and re-elected multiple times in elections certified as free and fair by international observers, including Jimmy Carter. He often wins by a landslide. And his popularity rating now is at 70%. What's the no based on, Pat? Nothing, of course. Here's the bonus lie.
He's building up weaponry against the United States, isn't he?
Hannity sneaks in a lie. Chavez is building up weapons against the United States, isn't he? What did he do? Chavez bought AK-47s for his army to defend against a U.S. invasion. How could he possibly threaten us? We have enough nukes to blow up the world, let alone Venezuela. Chavez's AK-47s are going to threaten us? Hannity's insane. Finally, here's Pat giving the coup de grace to his own credibility.
He's also calling for the destruction of George Bush. He calls him a war criminal.
So you want him taken out?
Not now, but one day.
Wow, so Robertson is just postponing his call for assassination. Moving on from Robertson, not to be outdone, and you know when these guys all appear at once spouting a line, it's part of a coordinated effort, Rumsfeld just compared Chavez to Hitler. He said, quote, I mean, we've got Chavez in Venezuela with a lot of oil money. He's a person who was elected legally, just as Adolf Hitler was elected legally, and then consolidated power, and now is, of course, working closely with Fidel Castro and Mr. Morales and others, close quote. The truth is, there's a more vigorous opposition press in Venezuela than in the United States. Hugo Chavez is not, as far as we know, wiretapping his own citizens illegally. Hugo Chavez is not, as far as we know, authorizing waterboarding and other forms of torture. Hugo Chavez, we do know, did not wage an unprovoked war of aggression against a nation that posed no threat to him. So, it seems that it's Bush, not Chavez, who, after being elected, and unlike Chavez, not legitimately elected, but stealing the election, it's Bush who is acting like a dictator. And the Mr. Morales that Rumsfeld refers to is, of course, Evo Morales, who was just elected by a landslide as president of Bolivia. Rumsfeld said about that, quote, "We've seen some populist leadership appealing to masses of people in those countries, and elections like Evo Morales in Bolivia take place that clearly are worrisome," close quote. Wow, the masses of people are being appealed to. These masses of people can be awfully dangerous, can't they, Mr. Rumsfeld? Maybe they want food, clothing, and shelter, not right-wing economic policies that starve, sicken, and otherwise immiserate them and their families. These masses of people, what are we going to do about them? Okay, beyond Robertson and Rumsfeld, we have Reagan-era Central American mass murderer and now, and this is scary, Director of U.S. Intelligence John Negroponte saying the following in testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee. Chavez, quote, "appears ready to use his control of the legislature and other institutions to continue to stifle the opposition, to reduce press freedom, and entrench himself through measures that are technically legal, but which nonetheless constrict democracy," close quote. Again, like when Rumsfeld was complaining about Chavez, doesn't what Negroponte said really sound more like Bush? Doesn't it? At least Chavez is fighting back. Venezuela and the United States just had a tit-for-tat exchange of diplomatic expulsions. In connection with that, Chavez warned, quote, "We now sell 1.5 million barrels a day of oil to the U.S. We have never missed our commitment. If the government of the United States wants to break relations with Venezuela, it would cost me nothing to order the closure of the refineries we have in the U.S. Then we will see where the price of oil will go, or a gallon of gasoline. It would cost me nothing to sell oil to other countries in the world." Close quote. India and China, of course, would be quite happy to buy Venezuela's oil if Venezuela was not selling it to us. So there you have it. Hugo Chavez, Hitler with nukes, consolidating his power. Just like the right-wingers were screaming about Saddam Hussein. At least with Saddam Hussein, he was a brutal dictator who had started wars and had engaged in mass murder. Chavez has done none of that. I wonder if the right wing will be able to sell its anti-Chavez campaign to the American public. If the American mass media is as asleep at the switch with Venezuela as they were with Iraq, the right wing will be able to do so. Stay tuned. Well, that'll about wrap it up for today. If you liked what you heard, please tell a friend about Blast the Right. If you think they would never get into podcasting as such, then just let them go to my podcast homepage and put their email address in the Feed Blitz sign-up box. Then they'll get an email notification of each new podcast which they can download. And remember, there's an easy-to-use, one-click, send this page to a friend link on the podcast homepage. Music credits. The opening music was You Razzle Dazzled 'Em by Bill Jacobs. He's at billjacobs.us. The bumper music between segments was No Justice, No Peace by Wackiavelli. They're at www.wackiavelli.com. WACKIAVELLI.com. We'll close with a bit of Catapult the Propaganda by Nise Music. They're at NISEmusic.com. If you would like to check out links to the articles and quotations I use in the podcast, you can go to my data resources page, which is linked to off the main podcast homepage. There's also a music resources page linked to off the main podcast homepage, where you can find links to all the music I use on the podcast. Let's keep those comments coming in. I like to hear from everybody. My address is rational@adelphia.net. You can also call in to leave a comment for me to play on the podcast. If you're on Skype, my Skype name is Jack from Blast the Right. Or you can call in from any phone, 310-933-5891, and leave your message. That's 310-933-5891. So, until next time, I'll sign off and say I love you all, including all you right-wing pieces of crap.
The kind of catapult of propaganda. In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again. The kind of catapult of propaganda. Catapult of propaganda.